Morning, colleagues. Morning, department. We should not delay you more than this. Other members will come ready to move on. But let us start with our meeting. You're most welcome, all of you. The meeting really is about our close by close rating and attending the coincidence. We have conducted many public hearings on this one, not all provinces. We are left with only one area in the Western Cape, I think it's been. We may be going there very soon, maybe before the end of this month, before we complete the bid. But general, I think the public hearing that we have conducted, they assisted us a lot to understand the issues of the community, the traditional leadership system, what are the challenges, and the relationship between traditional society and traditional leadership, the challenges of business in this area. Generally, really, we are aware about many issues that were raised by our communities. The 64th professor, view on that, community view on that, the whole issue of what they call boundaries, jurisdiction, soft one, hard one, the general discussion, really, I think we've had it. NGO also, and they made that presentation. We have a lot of discussion with them. They are persuaded in other areas, they are not persuaded in other areas. Because the nature of our democratic society, that whatever we do, there will be other views, really, in every bill, every idea. I think the newspapers also cover it very well, some critical, some positive. The traditional leadership that is targeted with this bill, generally, many of them are heavy on that. I'm talking about the genuine one. I'm not talking about those who form political parties to advance their own interests in this area. But the genuine one, they raise issues, really, that we should move with necessary speed to address what they are facing. They've been discriminated for a long time, and then the bill is going to assist them. We have also the committee ourselves taken a view that we must take them where they are, to the level where other traditional leaders are. And then the bigger question, Honorable Melham, I know that on this one we are going to do a lot of research. What is the role of traditional leaders in a democratic state? Because you are coexisting with them. Sometimes they are not as democratic as you want them to be, but it's the effect, they are here, they are recognized by Chapter 12, and then I think there's a detailed issues. I think one day, Professor, when you are ready, also can take us through on Chapter 12. What are the logic behind that, the rationality, what are the issues, why we didn't go into details for that, because I think it's a system that is evolving. A lot of challenges, impose one. It's really a very challenging area. But I do think that now, members of Parliament generally, who are members of this committee, now they know that what is the traditional system of government. They may not agree that we need them, and some agree that we need them to be there. We'll always have different views. We are South Africans, we talk a lot also. Very few who have South Africans who have no point of view. I think we are only countries that have everyone, even in the Shebeen, they have point of view. Generally, too, every person in South Africa has a point of view. Radios, and then you can listen to talk shows. We enjoy it because everyone has a point of view. Wrongly or rightly, but South Africans, they speak. We may do less, though, but I think we speak a lot. I think we are 50% in speaking, 10% in doing well. I think we have to move this area. The NGO sector also, I think they've made their points, and we have taken their point, have considered them sympathetically, because also they are part of the community, they've conducted research. they are genuine about what they are raising. They do also represent communities, sometimes in rural areas. And they have never claimed that they are a mass-based democratic organization. And therefore, they represent the views that they represent. They never claim that they represent a mass-based democratic organization. They are always assisting to give power capacity to our communities. I think the NGO sector itself is playing a very critical role in our society. The committee always welcomed them and they appreciated their effort. And we hope that they will continue engaging with us critically, assisting us to broaden our understanding of the challenges that we are facing in society, but also in terms of this bill on the traditional leadership system, broadly speaking. And I think public hearing broadly, like all public hearing, they will never be 100% satisfactory. They will always view, really, whether public hearing is about attendance or about input. We discuss this matter until, I think, the next 1,000 years. What is the quality of public hearing? Is it attendance, the number of people who attend, or the input that people give? We know they raise the issue, though, of giving sufficient time and to this public hearing, notification, all that. And then we have accommodated some of the issues that they've raised, that in future we'll have sufficient time. And then given the program of Parliament and see what else we can do to ensure that we give sufficient notices. They've raised the question of language and many other issues. And some of the issues we agree with and that we have to improve. But generally, all of us, we agree that we must try our level best to accommodate our communities in whatever area that are in. I think we are now at a point when I think we are ready to engage to the bill, clause by clause, and then taking some of the issues, understanding what is the wording, the rationale of it, and then take it to National Assembly. We may not agree to each and every clause, but broadly other clauses I think we'll agree. As long as they are brought at policy level, we agree that we can't wish away traditional leadership system of governance in our country. It's not possible to wish them away. They are here to stay, like all other countries anyway. I thought Britain is not a monarchy. I'm told that I'm wrong. It's a monarchy. Spain, there are monarchies. Belgium, there are a lot of monarchies everywhere in the world. Of course, I'm a Republican, General. I don't have a monarch in Alexander Township. Doctor, I know that you have monarchies somewhere, but not in Alexander Township. There are no monarchs. I take always a Republican approach in many issues. But given the situation in our country, we know that there are traditional leaders in the past working with them on that. We are also proposing a program that members of parliament must consider, see what you want to do with the program of the committee. Let us look at it and we'll endorse it once members of course are here. Discussion clause by clause, any members, even if there are two, they can discuss it. They're not taking any decision. They'll take a decision when they are two and work on it. And when we take a decision, we need a quorum. Discussing clause by clause, we can do so. There's a program that we are proposing. Look at the program. Maybe it's fine. Maybe you want to adopt it, you want to refine it. We know that our members are not available, and member Mteto tendered his apology. Member Maluleke, alternate member Mtemu, and the EFF member, he's not attending this meeting in general. Very difficult to locate him where he is. And Mahemizia, Mafondo, myself, Tube. Okay. Mene. Just a couple of things, and this is a point of order, Chair. First of all, we haven't finished the public hearing process in that we have a scheduled hearing to happen in Fredendal. I believe, and the DA believes, that it would render any deliberation that we do now irrelevant if we do not consider the full public hearing process. In other words, if we start the deliberations without having heard what is coming from Fredendal, we are going to end up in the Constitutional Court the same way that the NCOP did in Land Access Movement of South Africa versus Chairperson of the NCOP with regard to the Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Act. So I think we've got to finish that process, the public hearing process, before we consider the deliberation of the bill. That's the first point. The second is that in terms of Rule 162.2 of the National Assembly and its committees, every time we do a clause by clause, we are actually considering and taking a decision on that clause. In other words, we are saying, yes, we accept this clause, or we want to amend this clause, or we reject this clause. That is a decision of the committee. We can't take a decision of the committee here today because there are only four of us sitting here. We don't quorate. So I have a real problem with anything that we do today, including adopting a program even, because that's a decision of the committee. So I have a problem that we don't quorate. And I would ask that you make a ruling in that regard, Chairperson.
Some of them are coming already.
But they're not here.
Well, no. I'm saying that they're coming already for us to correct. And of course, that's a review. But the rules are set that I review that we shouldn't have an answer, but the rules are the same. We can call any member of parliament to come in to assist us to form a quorum. Or already they are. Police who have been requested to come with us to form a. Once we form a column, then we'll come back to the point of adopting the program, but also then we'll have some of the issues. But the intention really that the president, sometimes I consider the two areas, Fredendal and Fredendal. I think that one is already somewhere. In fact, we were supposed to have gone there when I was in China. We're not available on members. Not supposed to go there. We're supposed to go when the in terms of the problem, in terms of the problem of parliament that we adopted as a committee, we're supposed to have gone there. I think it was on the 4th, somewhere. But members are not available. And what should we do? When members are not available, they're not available. The program that we adopted last time was very clear that we must go there. And when members are not available, we can't wait forever and delay the other traditional leaders also who are desperate because they've been generally not part and parcel of the traditional leadership in our country. And I think the point that we are making is fine, is that we are going there and look at the date there in terms of the program, if you look at the program, before we finalize these bills. Would have invited you when there, but the point that you are raising, that we have visited Western Cape, Eastern Cape, all provinces in detail. Only one, in fact, is 0.02% really, that is left. It's one area in the Western Cape. We have had lots of other public areas in the Western Cape with discussions. That one would, in general, under normal circumstances, render the deal. Even if it goes to honorable whatever process that we call constantly the physicality that we should. We take the point that you are raising. we're supposed to have gone there. Then of course I was enjoying China. He said she must enjoy China. Mayhem must work on the club. Mayhem was nowhere to be found to work on the club. Then you postpone it. Now we have set up another day. But of course Mayhem want to persuade you though that let us move in terms of this plot by plot area. And if there are fundamental issues that they will raise by freedom, we'll then look at it, because we are going there before the game is run. But you know better than myself anyway. There's nothing new general that will come out of that. Will be nothing there that will change and change us completely in what you are trying to do. You are raising a point, a good point. But the date, the reason why we set up last week was because we are starting with clause by clause this week. We said that last week, one day, we move here from Sunday. Yeah? Supposed to move here from Sunday, by Monday there in Fredenberg. One full day there, have discussion, people were informed, everything. Members are nowhere to be seen. What can we do? We can't track members to go through Fredenberg. I think the judge, I will appear before the judge.
Okay.
I'll be advocate one day, at least one day privilege to be an advocate, and argue that members who are members anyway disappear. And then the masses were waiting for members nowhere to be found.
I think that's wrong.
I mean, there was no arrangement made. The trip was not... We had it on the program, but it was not scheduled. There was no arrangements made, nothing. So to say that the members were not around and the people were waiting, I think is disingenuous. I think that...
Members, the staff always link up with members. Members indicated that they won't be available. And then when they're not available, surely you should save money, you couldn't go ahead and do things that you are going to be only one person. Instead, it won't be you only. If you wanted to go alone, you would have arranged it. But I don't think we'd love to go alone then and spend the bill that you have not proposed yourself. Because the opposition, they have had a view on some of these issues, the policy letter. But I think we are waiting for two members to respect. These two members, any member of parliament can attend and become a full member. I had a view anyway, truly thinking that it shouldn't happen. But if it's a by you, my friend, it's a shame. When you're talking the Euros, you could have said that any member, even if he doesn't know what you are discussing, being that member or column deposit, I think now we are benefiting out of your wisdom. You get members that you can in and do that. There's nothing else we can do. And I think two members have apologized. We are going to Fredenberg this Sunday. This Sunday we are going there. The intention is to conclude close by close. And the meetings are cut out. But I can tell you I don't think there's any new thing. Of course, except the point that we're speaking. We have already had a few of people in the Western Cape. It is very exciting meeting in the chamber. All of them attended. We will visit our friends and to hear rather than you think. But that is all about it, of course, starting to put on some of it. We'll look at the program. Once you adopt the program, then we can move forward. There's tea and coffee while you are waiting for two members.
Chair, just before we go on, will you record the objection of the DA to that decision? To the fact that we can go to Fredenberg after we have commenced the deliberations on a clause-by-clause basis?
Where is Fredenberg? It's 0001%.
Chair, all I'm asking is that you record the decision, the objection. Chair, I'm asking that you record our objection.
We'll record it. The Senate will record it. How do you have a view? The minute you said that Nelson had a view, different view, not objection, but there's a different view. So do that, and there's no harm at all. We'll capture everything that you said correctly.
The rain must fall.
Shall we drink? 4 minutes.
Yeah, 4 minutes. Baba,
don't come. You arrange your own alternative. And then the meeting doesn't pass up because all channels will go automatically.
And he didn't make me do anything. He just
okay, it would be whoever, you know, the whole person. This and another one person. Yeah. 314, it must be.
Okay.
One very simple, people are going to open the meeting and have a discussion.
another thing I want to say.
Okay, anytime your attention is drawn to a quorum, you then need to take a decision as to whether a quorum exists.
Yeah.
Anytime that your attention is drawn to a quorum, I've drawn your attention to the lack of a quorum. How long are we going to...
Some comments are coming, that's fine.
15 minutes?
15,
20. Okay, I still take my laptop to you.
No, not far. Where? Well,
sign.
Yeah, I'm not going to see that guy.
can we first deal with our agenda and also deal with our, once we adopt the agenda and adopt the programs, we'll then allow Honorable, I think Honorable Mthethwa again, we'll allow Honorable Mpanza, Honorable Bemu to remain if they have some time to remain. If also they have a commitment, they will then leave to address, because we may not take a decision on the presentation that the department is going to make on the proposed amendment on the COINS and traditional leadership bill. The agenda, colleagues, is in front of you. We agree with the agenda. Clara Mason, seconded by Honorable Bemu. There's a program, there's a tentative program, because Parliament programs generally can change depending how they are. What is your committee? Programming committee. I'm no longer attending it anyway. Waking up early in the morning is difficult. Because programming committee may change from time to time, telling us what we can do. That is our program. Program from the today is the 15th. Of course, we are going to accept the presentation of the proposed amendment on the traditional and co-ed leadership bill by the department. Because we have a discussion with the department, members put their views, and then the department then have shut that. They are going to be making a very synchronized one, presentation, a little bit organized. Because we have a program that is here, but the date that is important, honorable members, is the 21st. We leave on Sunday, Honorable Madham was ready to raise the issue that we have not visited for public hearing purposes, Frederick. It's in the Western Cape, 120 kilometers from here, I'm told, and then leaving on Sunday, this Sunday, next week Sunday, because the week starts this Sunday. Moving this Sunday, I thought that Sunday is the beginning of the week, okay. This Sunday, we'll then move to Frederick on Monday, all day public hearing, and we drive back. This day, a caucus day, generally speaking. We may not put the indigenous. If there are caucuses that are sitting on this day, but in terms of our program, we thought that there would be generally very few meetings on that. And that is our program. And COI and SEN, we continue through the 22nd, Wednesday, 23rd, and then surely by that time, Wednesday, the 30th of December, of August, that would be the last day, really, when the bill would have looked clause by clause. It's not a very detailed bill, truly speaking. There are a few pages. It's just a difficult bill because we are dealing with traditional leaders. They are very difficult themselves sometimes. But we are, they are a very important institution. And then we move on that, and then in September, BEMU. And then in September, this is our program as we are proposing it. Of course, we are going to on the 29th, Honorable Masondo. Ourselves, we are meeting with the Ethics Committee from the People's Republic of China. They are meeting with the committee, Honorable Melham. They are here visiting South Africa. They want to meet with us. Honorable Masondo, I think also we can also be the attending. There's no harm because we are the one who are dealing with this issue. My son, as a chairperson, yourself, you are a whip. Would be a good idea also to join us when we are hosting them on the 29th. Then there's a workshop that we are proposing, take care of that one. Workshop for sector committees on the 12th September. Take care of that area again. And then the workshop that is going to be dealing with the effect of climate change, integrated urban development framework, and then also dealing with the network, South African Cities Network. 14th of September, and then the 13th of September, that is the most difficult one, colleagues. This one is the most difficult one. We need to apply our mind exactly how do you want to deal with this issue. A recommendation from SARS on our CRI, because there are hundreds and hundreds of individuals, people who are writing letters, notes to us on this question of religion. It's a very complex issue, question of religion. We will have to apply our mind, but it's happening 13th and 14th of September. Then we'll be receiving a report, looking at the report ourselves, seeing what you want to do in this report, the Honorable Malham. I think you get a view on this matter. Also, Honorable Masonda has a view on this matter, Honorable Mbanza. I think that day, Honorable Mbanza will join us also. We are preparing you to come also and have a discussion with us on this complex matter of abuse of people's belief in religious affairs. And it seems many formations in terms of religious formations are phoning us. They have to be notified. Once we adopt the agenda, we can't change it in the program because they have to be notified. There have been bishops and priests, and there are too many who want again the committee to interact with the committee on this matter. We must apply our mind. As a committee, whether we want again to go for this public hearing, we think the CRL has really conducted very detailed public hearings. We'll invite them also, CRL, to be here when they are dealing with this recommendation. They're really complex ones because religion and state is always a very difficult thing to deal with. And then how to deal with this matter? I think there are a lot of, some of them are former members of parliament. I think you know Cassie Ockham. And then if you want also to come and see us and advocate, I think was Chris Badenham. And then she would also want to come again next presentation at the Reform Research Center. There are many of them. Some are very small congregation. But it seems this issue has raised their real interest to have a discussion with us on that. Then the 13th and the 14th of September, we'll look at that report. And the members who are co-opted today, they will also be co-opted that day, even when members are there, but just for them to assist us to deal with this complex issue. The program is presented for your consideration, colleagues. Like all programs, really, not fixed on stone, because parliamentary issue may end up again another vote. These votes are too many. We may end up with a vote of dissolution of parliament. And all these other votes, and there are a lot of things that are happening. Malham?
Chair, I don't have a problem with the program per se. I do still raise my objection to the fact that we are having public hearings after the deliberations commence on the bill, and I think that we should postpone deliberations on the CKLB until after the public hearings are concluded. Chair, there was another issue that I wrote to you about on the 31st of July, where I requested that you summon the minister to report on the relationship between his department and Trillion Capital Holdings. I have not received a reply to that letter, and I don't see it on the program.
Oh, no, I know that Secretary has responded one way or another on that. Of course, I have responded on what you have said. He's on his way. The point that we're having, though, is that it's a difficult issue just to read anything on the paper and then someone minister to come and account. We should go beyond that, I guess, to get more information for us that will assist to summon the minister to come before the committee and account for his relationship with Trillion. I think the board issue is Gupta issue that you are raising, truly speaking. And then those are issues that are there and public discussion everywhere. we are responding to your letter accordingly, but you look at it and then we'll engage. What you want us to do. We'll fix it. The program is not cast in stone. If there's a need for that, because what also you should not do, to have multiple processes. There was already an agreement for the Judicial Commission of Inquiry. That has been agreed, that we shouldn't go for piecemeal approach. I guess that we have to call everyone that comes in there. I think that would give us problems. Can we accept the program? Honorable Banza, just a second for us to accept the program and the agenda. Then we'll allow you. Transport is very, very important, but it's raining anyway. We'll take the point that Honorable Melham is raising. The program is adopted. And of course, if there are things to share, but it's complex what Melham is raising. We read in the press a lot of accusations against the minister, trillion. What we do as members of parliament, do we follow something that is not verified with us? What do we do? I think Melham is taking a view that sometimes it's good to call the ministers to answer for those things, then they will clarify themselves, some of those issues. But once you start many processes on top of a review of the report, and then many other things, it's a very complex issue. It's a political issue more than anything. If I'm in opposition, I was going to raise also, because it's a political issue. No, it's a political issue. Opposition must always raise difficult questions, because what else anyway can do as opposition if they don't trick and trip the governing party? I think they're doing what they're supposed to do. The governing party must look at how they want to address some of these issues. We have responded accordingly to Honorable Melham. We are going to have a discussion about those issues. DG is here also. She is very sensitive on this issue. She's going to convey the message. It would be very nice to see everyone sitting here, Melham becoming a judge.
See, I want the minister. The minister.
Okay. Thank you very much. You are going to accommodate that. The program is adopted. Thank you very much, Honorable Panel. You belong to this committee anyway. By extension. Yeah. Thank you very much. Well. Yeah, call it Yerba.
That are written in the media, in the paper, in radio, in talk show, how do you deal with that situation? It's something that our church must really address. Can we then invite the department to assist us in what they are proposing as amendment? We take the point that you may have raised. We are not going to give it clause by clause now. If that's a presentation, then we'll adjourn. Amendment, that's what we have discussed with you. So make that presentation, you look at them, and of course they're going to be, I think it's electronically given to members. Members are banned electronically. Give it to members, they will look at it, when we come the next meeting, they will have lost the decision. I'm told that you are going to ask this question.
Thanks, Jay, and good morning, honorable members. We have, based on discussions that have taken place at the committee in the past, as well as some of the issues raised during public hearings, And you will recall a few weeks ago we gave our views on the committee's own report, and we got a sense of what may be accommodated in the sense of proposed amendments. So we work on something, and we have submitted it now to Shireen, and she will send it to members so they have a look at it at their own time. Most of these amendments, you will see, are basically of a technical nature, but there's one or two that is content-related. And the most important one deals with the composition of the National House. And we only got the National House agreement to that particular proposal this morning. So I must immediately also say that these particular proposed amendments, besides that members have not seen it before, the legal advisors also have not seen them yet. The amendments also come from, or was informed to some extent by the reconstitution process that's currently underway. Members will recall the DG informed them a few months ago that the old reconstitution of traditional councils, the houses of traditional leaders is underway. And that also, there's a couple of challenges that was realized during that process. And we're also trying to address some of them. Chair, if we can go through them, I want to explain also, actually, with the previous bill that we had to the committee, someone was asking about the way of numbering. So let me just quickly explain how the numbering works. This process of proposing committee amendments is actually quite a complicated and difficult thing, because you have to refer to the particular page and the particular line of the bill, because the bill as it is published has line numbers on the side. And then the numbering under each clause that you do starts with one. So if you look on screen, I just want to go quickly to a specific example. If you look at this, for example, these are amendments to clause 16. So the first one is 2, the number there on the left-hand side is 1, and the next one is 2, and the next one is 3. And then when you get to the next clause, you start again with 1, 2, 3. So I hope members understand that, but it even took me, I remember, when I started with this kind of work a few years ago, a while to understand it. So you need to refer to the original bill then also when you look at these proposed amendments. Now the first one is to clause 4 of the bill, and it's on page 9 of the bill, in line 10. Now this clause deals with the withdrawal of recognition of a kingship or a queenship or a principal traditional community, a headship or a headwomanship. There's a proviso to that particular clause, and this is about the request for withdrawal of recognition. And the proviso says, provided that such a request must be accompanied by the grounds on which the request is based. We're proposing to add the word so that it will read, provided that such a request must be accompanied by a resolution of each traditional council of such traditional communities and the grounds on which the request is based. So that is the proposed insertion. That is to bring it in line with some other clauses in the bill, and to make sure that there is actually a resolution taken by the traditional council to say we want withdrawal of recognition. The next one is to clause 16, which is on page 26. This particular clause deals with the establishment of kingship or queenship councils, principal traditional councils, or traditional councils. The whole clause deals with that. Now on page 26, from line 17, which is subsection 4A, let me explain here before I go into the clause itself. What is happening here? Can you see on this one, Jim? The ones behind you are probably quite... Okay, members, see that? Okay. Remember that the bill, I mentioned it previously, the bill has a lot of clauses that refer to terms of office. And all those terms of office were going to expire in 2017. They are expiring in 2017. And the bill had a staggered approach as to when a term of office expires and when it will commence again, to make sure that, because the one structure feeds into it. Now, I'm going to open another document now to show you what I mean. Now, everywhere in the bill, you have the dates as being 2017. We thought at the time that by 2017 this would have been resolved. So all those 2017 dates, and this is where the technical amendments come in, all those 2017 dates that relate to the terms of office of structures, we are changing, proposing to change to 2022, which is where the next 5 years, with the current term that will start soon, is going to come to an end. But I want to show members quickly, because a lot of these amendments are related to the date. Let me just open this document and show you. This is also coming from the process that is currently underway with the reconstitution of terms. If you look at that, we have traditional councils and Khoisan councils. Currently, in the bill, the term will end at 31 March 2017, obviously the date that has passed. Kingship and Queenship Councils and Principal Traditional Councils, also 31 March. Local Houses, 31 March. Provincial Houses, 30 April. National House, 31 May. So there was the staggered approach. But when the team started working on assisting provinces with the reconstitution process, they noted that the provincial legislation on provincial houses and local houses differ. And there are provinces where you first need to have your traditional council in place before you can have your local house in place, before you can have your provincial house in place. So to make provision for that staggered approach and to accommodate the 2022, the proposed term through these proposed committee amendments then for traditional and coastal councils will be 31 March 2022. Kingship, Queenship and Principal Traditional Councils will be 30 April 2022. Local houses will be 30 April 2022. Let me just explain why Kingship, Queenship Councils and local houses will have the same term. They do not influence each other. You need to have, in some provinces, a traditional council before you can have a local house, but not the kingship council. The kingship councils do not feed into the local house, so that's why they can both end at 30 April 2022. Then provincial house is 31 May 2022, and the national house 30 June 2022. This will give all of them a staggered approach to so the one that must feed into the other will be there before the other one can be established. There's no, although legislation talks about alignment, there's no such thing as perfect alignment when it comes to structures that must feed into each other. So just to explain, that is why there are a lot of there's a lot of amendments in this bill concerning dates. So the next one, if I can go back to this particular, Shireen, I will send this also to you, this particular one, so that you can email to me with. The next one then, clause 16, if I can go back to that, is exactly just to make provision for this whole issue of the different terms coming to an end. On page 26 from line 17, as I said, if we look at this particular clause 16, then in subsection 4A, we are splitting up A because of that the difference now between the traditional council and other councils. Because the traditional council's term needs to come to an end first, and what this particular clause is then saying is that they will end on 31 March 2022, and then a new two deals with the term of office of the Kingship and Queenship Council and the Principal Traditional Council, which will come to an end on 30 April 2022. Then also on page 26, in line 35, it's still dealing with the same clause. After the word jurisdiction, we are proposing to insert the words indicating the portions of land forming part of such area of jurisdiction. So if you read that particular clause, this is a clause, by the way, which you find currently in the existing legislation also. It says that the Premier concerned must, by notice in the relevant provincial gazette and in accordance with this act, recognize a kingship or a queenship council, a principal traditional council or a traditional council for that particular kingship or queenship, principal traditional community or the traditional community, and define its area of jurisdiction. Mr. Meiring here will tell you that over the years, these areas of jurisdiction of the traditional communities have been proclaimed over many years. And what we're adding now is that they must indicate the portions of land that form part of that area of jurisdiction, just to bring absolute clarity. We'll come to another proposed amendment later on where, the next one, on page 26, after line 42. Currently, it says that, it's a proposed new paragraph C to be added. They talk about the area of jurisdiction contemplated in paragraph A must be mapped, and such map must be published under the notice referred to paragraph A. The reason for the mapping is that you will see in the bill that provision is made that in the future, if the bill passes, that the IEC may also be involved and assist with the election process of the Bishop Council, you know, the 40% election process of this council. One of the challenges that they have is that they do not really know what exactly the area is. So besides defining the area of jurisdiction, it's also proposed that those areas where it's defined actually be mapped.
John, you want to do the mapping?
The demarcation board and rural development, there's already been discussions with them to assist with such a mapping process. In Chapter 17, which is the establishment of a traditional sub-council. It's proposed to omit subsection 2 and to substitute it with a new subsection 2, which is including this. They don't currently have it, but including this to say that when the area of jurisdiction is defined of that sub-council within traditional council, that area must also be mapped and be published in the provincial gazette, so there's absolute clarity about what area forms this traditional sub-council. On page 28, this is still about traditional sub-councils. From line 34, this is sub-clause 7 at the moment. Let me just read you the current sub-clause 7. The term of office of members of the traditional sub-council must be aligned to the term of office of the members of the main traditional council. We realized when we looked at this again, you know, this bill is quite lengthy and sometimes you miss a few things. We realized that while we have terms of office for all these councils in the bill, we never actually determined the term of office of the sub-council. So it must be aligned to the one of the traditional council. So we've basically replaced this clause, sub-clause 7, and basically bring in this provision that term will also expire on 30 April 2022 after they've been re-established now, and they will expire every 5 years on 30 April, calculated from 30 April 2022. There's something else I must just maybe say to members. When these terms of all these structures will end in 2022, let's say, for example, the National Health, that will end on 30 June 2022, it will end every 5 years on 30 June 2022. We drafted the bill in such a way that it will be every 5 years.
Okay. Can you ask questions in pink? Because otherwise you're going to lose track of
okay. Yeah, no, because okay. you don't have a copy, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just seeing it there.
Yeah.
See, my question is this. If I look at the original clause 7, well, sub-clause 7, it says the term of office of members of a traditional sub-council must be aligned to the term of office of the members of the main traditional council. Now, you've already determined in clause 16 what the term of office of the main traditional council is. Why are we going to such lengths in clause 17? It just makes the legislation very textually heavy and complex. You know, if you say in the original document that it must be aligned to the traditional council, and 16 has changed to say here's what the traditional council's term is, why do we have to go to such lengths to specifically define what the sub-council is?
Only to make sure there's absolute legal certainty. Because while you have now these terms for all the other structures, this is the one structure where we didn't provide the specific term. So we don't want anybody to come and say, hey, you forgot about this, or now raise questions to say, but now what is this term? It's just for legal certainty.
Okay.
I agree, it's a lot of words. But it's basically just to make sure that there's no doubt or anything about the term. Clause 18. Clause 18 deals with the establishment of the Poisson Council. Now, on page 29, in line 39, we're proposing to omit a reference. This is sub-clause 5 of clause 18. It currently says the provisions of section 16.2b and d, sub 4, sub 5, etc., apply to a Poisson Council. We're deleting the reference to 16.4. 16.4 is the one dealing with terms of office. And that is because now you will see, if you look at number 2 there, that on page 29, after line 52, we are bringing in a very specific clause dealing with the Khoisan Council and their term of office, again for legal certainty. The previous one was an easy drafting style, that is, oh well, you know, the same thing that applies there applies here. But we thought, no, let's bring in legal certainty and say exactly what the term is. And that is what number 2 there is explaining, page 29, after line 52, to insert those particular provisions dealing with the Khoisan Council. And clause 27, this clause deals with the establishment and the term of the National House. Now, the 1 and 2 there is basically to change the current dates of 2017 to 2022. Those are the easy ones. But now, Chair, here comes the most important proposal. Clause 28. Current legislation, National House Act, connected to the current Framework Act, and the current bill, says that the National House, I think members are well aware of the fact that it says the National House consists of 3 representatives from each province. They must be elected by the provincial houses of traditional leaders. Obviously, there's 2 exceptions. The one is the Western Cape. They do not have representatives because they do not have recognized traditional leaders. And the other one is Gauteng, where there's only 2 recognized senior traditional leaders. And they are ex officio members of the National House. Now, after discussions within the department, listening to some of the comments made by people over the extensive consultation period, and also discussions with the National House, the current National House, we realized that we may have a situation that would be quite unfair towards traditional leadership. And to explain it, for example, if you look at, let's say, KwaZulu-Natal, currently, and I mean, we all know there's more than 300 senior traditional leaders in KwaZulu-Natal, and they are represented at the National House, well, Provincial House, and then at National House by 3. That's what the current law says. Now, we don't want to do away with the 3, but what the bill currently says is that if there is also a recognized senior Khoisan leader in that particular province, then and in that provincial house, then at least one of these 3 must be a recognized senior Khoisan leader that is elected for the National House. Which means if you have currently three senior traditional leaders, you're taking away one. And one must be a Khoisan person. So a big province like KZN with lots and lots of hundreds of senior traditional leaders will now only be represented by 2. The same with the Eastern Cape. On the other hand, you will have the Western Cape. We all know that no one knows how many Khoisan people and communities will apply for recognition and how many will eventually be recognized. In the Western Cape, where you do not have senior traditional leaders, it can only be, if they are recognized in future, Khoisan leaders. So after very careful consideration, we're proposing to change this particular clause by changing the membership of the National House, by retaining the number of 3 for traditional leadership. And if I can take you through it, there's 2 things. There's another thing that came up during this reconstitution process. We also wanted to create certainty as to what is the position where you do have a provincial house of traditional leaders and where you do not have a provincial house. You must remember that even in the Western Cape in future, if they do have recognized Khoisan leaders, they may not necessarily have a provincial house. And Gauteng the same. Whether they will have or won't have senior Khoisan leaders added to the leadership position there, they may or may not have a provincial house. So we wanted to make it clear what's the distinction. So we are proposing to amend that clause 28 to say that the National House consists of senior traditional and senior Khoisan leaders. This is what the bill currently says. Elected by each provincial house, which is fine. We stay with that. And where relevant persons contemplate in subsection 2. That is basically the same as this. But now, coming to the B, then we say, in a province where a provincial house has been established, and there are only senior traditional leaders, no recognized Khoisan leaders in other words, it will remain as the current situation is, 3 senior traditional leaders that must be elected to the National House. In a province where there's only senior Khoisan leaders, which may be the Western Cape in future, it's also going to be only 3. So it's the same number as currently. But if you go to a province where you have more senior judicial leaders than senior courtroom leaders, the example that I mentioned, for example, maybe case 8 is the case, then it will be 3 plus 1. And the same with the other way around. If there's a province where you're going to have more courtroom leaders than traditional, it will be the same, 3 plus 1. If you have an equal number of senior and senior traditional and senior courtroom leaders, which is possible, unlikely but possible, it will be 2-2. And then if you have two or less than two of either or both senior courtroom leaders or senior traditional leaders, they will be ex officio members of the national. This is basically the Gauteng situation currently.
See, I have a problem with this. On the basis that it means that two of the most populous provinces, namely Gauteng and the Western Cape, are effectively going to have fewer representatives to the National House than other provinces. In other words, a province like, for example, the Northern Cape, and I don't know the breakdown of the Northern Cape, I have no idea, where you might have more Khoisan leaders than traditional leaders, you would have 3-1. You'd have 4 representatives to the National House. But a province like Gauteng would only have 2, and a province like the Western Cape would only have 3. And I think that's going to be problematic from a representative democracy perspective. I don't think this amendment would pass constitutional muster. That's my opinion. I mean, I could be wrong. But I think that what you're proposing here is very problematic. I would prefer that we said all provinces have 3 members. It's either 2-1 one way or 2-1 the other way or whatever. But that the limit be 3 members per province. Because that's fair. Every province gets the same representation. But now you're starting to say that the Northern Cape, which is one of the least populated areas in South Africa, has more representation than Gauteng. That's not fair and not right.
Yeah, check. I mean, currently, the fixed number currently is not proportional. So it works on the same principle as the NCOP. It doesn't matter how many people there are in the province. The reality is that in Gauteng, for example, there's only 2 recognized senior judicial leaders, and they are both there. In case 10, with more than 300, there's only 3 senior judicial leaders elected to the National House because of the fixed number. So one can also then say, but how is that possible? You know, but this is just a proposal. I mean, this is for committee to deliver. What I can say is that the National House is supporting this. The whole point here was to add on the Khoisan leadership without taking away the representation of the traditional leadership. We worked it out, only our estimates, but we have a more or less an idea, you know, what the situation in provinces are. We worked it out. The increase in membership of the National House, currently the National House is, the maximum membership is 27. There are 23. No, it's allowed for 27. 3 per province. But it's 23 because of Western Cape having no representative and Gauteng only having the 2. So, in fact, it's 23, but the Act allows for 27. With this proposal, we worked it out. It will increase to about 34, more or less. That's our estimate. So it's not like it's going to be a massive increase. So what we basically are proposing with this is actually leaving the National House as it currently is and adding the Khoisan representatives instead of having Khoisan representatives replacing existing traditional leadership. But it's for the committee to discuss it. It's just a proposal. And then, of course, the subsection 2 there.
But you have already engaged with the traditional leadership,
yeah.
The National House.
Yes.
They almost agreed with you.
This morning, they actually had their meeting this morning, yeah. That's why I couldn't distribute this earlier, because we had to get the National House agreement first, whether they support it.
They buying the idea.
Yeah, they do.
That's what you agree with, to add quite.
And we also looked at
where they exist.
Well, yeah.
Because we may not have quite the content.
The to Bumalama.
Yeah. You may have those there, the modern case, the same 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 case, but in other areas, it will be just very small communities here and there. But they think that this accommodation also. But there's also quite a national plan to have spaces.
No, we haven't yet. The the National Cultural Council is a different story that we will have to talk about. So, but the thing with this is that we must also not forget that the bill does not prescribe how a provincial house will be.
Yeah.
Provincial legislation will also have to be amended to determine exactly how the provincial houses will look in future. And these people, traditional and cultural leadership, will have to be presented at provincial house level. And there they're looking at different ways of doing it, if it differs from province to province. And then remember, at local house level, all recognized senior and traditional Khoisan leaders will be members of local houses in that particular area. So this is just for the purposes of the national house. We also went a little bit further and so we said, okay, what will be, for example, the financial implications? Because I know Mr. Milan is going to ask it. We looked at it. I know, I'm reading it. So we looked at that, sir. And remember, these members will all be members of the relevant provincial housing. And what will happen in the what currently the national department has a budget for the national health, our department for the national health. They are both. The members of the national health, the chairperson, deputy chairperson are full-time members, we know that. And they get salaries as the determined by the president based on the remuneration commission's recommendation. These other members that come from provinces, provincial houses for meetings, they get a sitting on hour, which is also prescribed. And we worked it out, and I will show the young you that document if we get tomorrow. It's not a lot, because it will only be these few additional ones, because I said will not be more than 8-9 maybe, where you will have travel expenditure and general accommodation, S&T, it will be S&T. They're not going to get salary because they're members of the national house, because they get salaries as a recognized leader. That's where the salary comes from. It's only on your national house, it's only your chair, your deputy chair, where the salary is different because it's determined by the president. It's less than the MP salary, the initial one. Then the subclause 2 has a similar provision, but this one just deals with instances where you do not have a provincial house. It just tells you, it's the same principle that will apply, but it tells you how it will be dealt with where you do not have a provincial house. There are challenges at the moment. We all know that Gauteng doesn't have a provincial house, and the Western Cape in future, they will not immediately have a provincial house. They may establish one at a later stage, but when this bill becomes law, they will not immediately have a provincial house. So this tells you, okay, how do you deal with it? It's the same principle, the representation principle, but here you will then be focusing on the council that must be recognized instead of the house. So then clause 29.
Okay.
Yeah.
We go on. We don't specify who will conduct that election in the absence of a provincial house. In other words, in a provincial house you have structures and formal proceedings and so on and so forth that say this is the process that must be followed. But where you don't have a provincial house, I would strongly suggest there needs to be some kind of procedure, who is going to call for that election, who is going to manage that election, etc., etc.
I know the Premier was calling for the election as prescribed in the relevant provincial legislation. As I said, of course, the challenge is going to be that none of them have made provision yet.
Well,
that's my point. But I will look into that. We will look into that and include that.
Because they will have to amend their legislation.
Yeah.
To accommodate COINS 7 months after.
Correct.
The point, Chair,
yeah.
is that the Western Cape
and Gauteng don't have legislation, they don't have provincial houses. So who will actually conduct that process? Who will manage it? Who will oversee it, etc.?
Yeah. I will add something. We will add something to make that clear. Thank you. I understand what Marlon is saying. He said, in this particular case, you see, they say you must elect from amongst themselves the representatives. What he's asking is, who's going to call that election to get them together? Yeah, but I think you're right. We put it in there. We'll say it.
Legal by the Premier, legal by the Independent Electoral Commission, or whoever you want to manage it.
That was a difficult bylaw.
You see, Jay, with that proposal, that addition, I can see he's now trying to convince himself to support this bill. The island is going to support this one.
Well,
yes.
I think it's open-minded. I just think in thinking. It's wrong. But I think the point that is raised is very important, because
we'll do that.
This thing can cause a lot of confusion in areas where not every province is too enthusiastic about the traditional leadership. And even those provinces that they have, they've been pushed, there are the traditional leaders there were very focused. And it's an issue that has to be addressed. I think that we are saying put it there, Premier, where it's out. We'll therefore be able to say it out.
We will do it after this meeting, and then send to Shireen so that she sent out the updated version. Check clause 29, which is about the election and designation of members of the National House. There's this proposal that we made now, or to the amendment of clause 28, as to the composition of the House. This is now a cross reference in clause 29 that we have to change. If the committee accepts that one in the end, the amendment to clause 28, we have to change some cross-references. The same applies here in clause 31. It's a cross-reference that has to be changed. Both 1 and 2 there on page 36 are cross-references. Now, this one, clause 38, we're actually not changing anything but a technical issue. I want to show members, to you. I don't know whether you have the bill in front of you, but on page 39, if you look from page 39, subsection 3, you will see that, let me show you, you will see that this hole on the paragraph B, anything is locked there.
Yeah.
On the paragraph B. On the B is locked. As if it's all one paragraph in it, all belonging to paragraph B. The problem is incorrect. So nothing is changed in this clause. No content is changed. But that particular word that says and make recommendation must apply to the whole, to A and B, and not only to paragraph B.
Yeah.
So we're just bringing it up. I don't even know whether this is the way to do it, but I wanted members to be aware of it. I think this is something that probably would have been done just technically with the printer. But not to forget about it, and to make sure members are aware of it, we're just bringing out those words to make sure that people know it applies to the whole of that. The whole of clause 3. Clause 49, if I remember correctly, 49 deals with houses, local or provincial houses, I think. Yeah. Again, one is about dates, the alignment of dates. Two is about dates. Three is about the cross-reference to the 28th, if we change the membership of the provincial, the National House. And subsection 3 on page 42. Now, the bid bill correctly says very little about provincial houses because it's left to the provincial estimation. Currently, on page 42, it says that the membership of a provincial house, basically it's what they say, must be composed in such a way that both senior traditional leaders and senior portion leaders are represented in the provincial house, basically in the same manner or proportion that they are represented at the local house. So all that we are doing here, we're just bringing in something to make clear that how will it be where there are local houses? Because it's not compulsory to have local houses. So you have provinces where you have local houses, you have provinces where you do not have. And we realize that we did not make provision for a situation where there are no local houses. So all that this amendment is saying is, what is the situation where you do have local houses, and what is the situation if local houses have not been established? If they've not been established, then you basically look at the way that they are represented in council. Clause 50, which is the clause dealing with local houses as such, again, it's dates, technical amendments, changing 2017 to 2022, both of those. In clause 56, it's about the functions of the commission. You know, the current CTLDC, Commission of Traditional Leadership Disputes and Claims. On page 46, in line 55, now this is about sub-clause 8, and let me just quickly explain the whole of sub-clause 8. This sub-clause tells you what has to be done with disputes and claims that cannot be dealt with by the CTLDC. Do you remember the CTLDC term is coming to an end, and in fact there was a cut-off date. They can only deal with claims that were submitted after a certain date. But these things do not stop. Disputes and claims keep on arising. And current legislation says that it must be dealt with by provinces in terms of provincial legislation. The one challenge that we've realized is that, unfortunately, many of the provinces do not have provision in their own legislation on how to deal with it. So the current sub-clause, as it reads, currently in the bill, unchanged, brings in a procedure, to a minimum procedure, to tell provinces, well, this is what you should be doing. But some of the comments we received is to say that, unfortunately, you guys in the department, you did not put timelines. So we intend to bring in certain time frames, kind of to force the decision makers to take decisions within a specific period, like 60 days. And that is what this particular proposal under clause 56 are all to bring in deadlines to say you need to do this within 60 days or whatever the case may be. It's kind of forcing people to take decisions along the way.
I don't know where everybody's gone. Can I just get a clarity on the 2 days? If you could just scroll up a little bit.
Okay.
So in your amendment number 1, which amends subsection 8A1, 8AI, you're saying that the Premier, for example, will then establish a commission or an investigative committee, let's call it, within 60, which must report within 60 days. I have no problem with that. I then go to 2, where it says that refer the report. That's the report of that investigative committee. So after the 60 days, they refer the report to the relevant king, queen, kingship, queenship, traditional council, whatever it might be, who then must reply within a further 60 days. Is my understanding correct?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Correct. And then the proposal that we're adding then there, you know, the paragraph B and C, is then to say, but you, the decision makers, you know, you can't just sit on this forever. You also need to deal with this with a specific time frame. Now, Clause 70 is the clause dealing with transitional provisions. as you will see there, the first few are all about the dates that we spoke about, changing the date from 2017 to 2022, bringing it in line with the other particular amendments. Then if you go to the, to page 54, the transitional provision currently ends with subclause 16. So we're proposing to add a few additional subclauses. They're all related, no, most of them are related to what we changed in the beginning or earlier in the text relating to these time frames. And again, it's really to bring absolute certainty, legal certainty, as to when does what end will stop. So the first one, 17, by the way, there are clauses currently that deals with, like subclause 12, tells you about the National House. Despite the fact that it's mentioned earlier in the text, in the transitional provision, we very specifically are going to say that people who are members of the National House, when this bill becomes law, remain members until that particular date in 2022. We have a similar provision about members of provincial houses, and we have a similar provision about members of local houses. So some of the comments that we received along the way were saying, okay, you have everything about the houses, but you never said anything about the council. Can you just provide legal certainty? So that's what we're doing. Subclause 17 is a very similar provision to what we already have for the houses. This talks about the kingship and queenship councils, principal judicial councils, judicial sub-councils. Their date of when their term will come to an end, and that people who are members of those councils, when this will become law, will remain until that particular date. The proposed subclause 18 is doing exactly the same for the judicial councils. The proposed subclause 19 is doing the same for quasi councils, but with one difference. Remember, the other councils are existing traditional councils. They are there, their term is expiring now, they are being reconstituted as well. The Khoi and Son councils do not yet exist. They will only come at a later stage. Therefore, they will not have an expiry date, if I can call it that, in 2022. There may not even be a quasi council by that date, or there may be, we don't know. So, to be fair, because you also don't want a situation, let's say for argument's sake you have the Khoisan community that, let's say, recognized in 2021, and now they're there for a year, and then they must go through the whole process again. That would not be justifying the cost. So with them, we are proposing to say then that notwithstanding the provisions of Section 18, which is about the composition, the members of a Khoisan council was established in terms of this act prior to 31 March 2022, in other words, prior to that expiry date when the judicial council will expire, they will remain members of the council for 31 March 2027. So they will be a full 5 years, like all the other councils, with a possibility of maybe 5.5 years, maybe 6 years. Just to, like, if you work it out, you know, the whole process that will be followed. Remember that the law says, current law, for judicial councils, and the same will apply to Khoisan councils. That once the community is recognized, the council must be established within 1 year. If we look at where we are now, 2017, and when this bill may become law, and the recognition process that must be followed, we believe that these Khoisan councils, for the first recognized communities, will most probably only come in 2021, 2022.
But by 2027,
then they will have a full 5 years.
We have to realign what we don't want if you are part of the whole forest.
Yeah. And then they will be aligned with the
family forest. It's going to take long for recognition of the counterclaims and claims and all that. The committee that is going to be looking at this is going to take longer. Maybe through that about 2022, they establish them now. 2027, then is the first step, first 5 years.
Right.
Just they should have a system where all of them traditionally leadership system in South Africa. They got a cut-off date in terms of the term in the beginning of the new term. That is not stuck at outside it forever because then cause problems. That is excluded from other processes that they need.
Now, something that's new, Jim, is 20, because we proposed of course 20. We realized also that before all these terms end in 2022 of the existing structure that are reconstituted now, There may be Khoi Islam leaders who will be recognized prior to David's letter or the current structure anyway. So how do you accommodate them? Do you wait till 2022 and say, well, you have to wait for 2022 before you become part of all existing structures? So we are proposing to say, well, in such instances, recognized senior Khoi Islam leaders can become members of the national house, provincial houses, and the local houses. Those will be your joint branches. With effect on the date referred to in those particular clauses dealing with those houses, and that, if you look at B, which is more important, that they will become co-opted members. Co-opted members with observer states. Because again, as I said, remember the promises of First Amendment law, that they help those who have help. They must first amend it to accommodate the point of some.
But that all other provinces except
housing
and housing and whatever, we don't have any provincial constitution. But all other provinces that are over nations,
yeah,
who have their own laws.
But
the entire laws, they are not even the same. Some of them are very contradictory to what we are proposing. Then they will have to amend their own law before they start establishing councils.
Not the councils as such, the poison councils, because the way that this bill is written, provinces, I think we discussed this, I must maybe just repeat this quickly, you know, when the bill was tabled in Parliament in 2015, we did the first briefing on the bill. Remember that the concurrency with the 12th of the Constitution, right, with the Schedule 4, is for traditional leadership, and that there's a very strong argument to say that the Khoi Islam leadership is not part of Chapter 12, that's why they've never been recognized before. And therefore they, legislation about the Khoi Islam is exclusive to their national competency. Unless you, as national parliament, assign, in terms of the constitution, there's provision for that, particular powers to the provinces. So one of the things to keep in line with current legislative powers is the provincial and local houses that will be assigned to provinces. Although we have a clause 50 that deals with local houses in detail, and that's the reason for that. But at the moment, if you look at the situation in the Northern Cape, Khoi Islam people who are not recognized, we all know they're not recognized, but Khoi Islam, well, not statutory recognized, Khoi Islam leaders have been forming part as observers of the provincial house in the Northern Cape for a couple of years. And that was like a gentleman's agreement between national and provincial government. So they've been there, they've been observing, but we've been saying now if they are officially recognized, what do we do? And we say, well, until that time in 2027 when they can officially become members, allow them to be co-opted, allow them to have observer status throughout the country on these provincial houses where they are houses, it will give them exposure. And obviously the province is going to say, yes, who's going to pay for what? We're saying the proposed paragraph C of 20 that a recognized senior Khoi Islam leader who becomes a co-opted member of a provincial or a local house may be reimbursed for his travel and accommodation. So it's S&T only. There's no salaries involved or sitting allowance at this stage. In accordance, and this will must be done in accordance with the travel and assistance policy of that particular provincial department who's responsible for the support to that house. Another 21 is the last of the proposed additions to the transitional provision, and you will recall in clause 70, the transitional clause, in the beginning of the clause, I think it's sub clause 2 or 3, there's an issue dealing with what EG and our political heads refer to as the proliferation of hetman, the mushrooming of headmen and headmanship in the past few years. And we brought in a specific clause in the transitional provision, sub-clause 2 or 3, saying, look, once this bill becomes law, all these headmen headmanships must be investigated to see, do you meet the criteria of the law or not? And then it says how you must deal with it. We've realized that because of the uncertainty in the areas of jurisdiction of council, Remember earlier I said that we're proposing amendments to say where you have to define, when you define the area of jurisdiction, you must also be mapped for demarcation purposes, in the future for IEC purposes. But there are many of those who may not have been mapped. So we are bringing in this judicial provision to say that where any of the areas of jurisdiction have been defined prior to the commencement of this Act, but it has not been mapped yet, then the province must, within 3 years from the commencement of this Act, when it becomes law, have that area of jurisdiction mapped and published that map for public information so that people are aware of what are the areas. Just a transitional provision to force them to do also for what already exists and not only for near one. That may come.
Chair, not a problem with 21, but if we could just scroll back up a bit to some of the other ones there. Can you discuss a little bit more? That was the 2027 thing about the quasar.
Oh,
19. Okay. So let's say, I don't know, the Northern Cape, who have been probably the furthest ahead of co-opting members onto provincial houses, etc., get their act together and sort out everything, and within the next 6 months start recognizing Khoisan leaders and Khoisan councils after the act is adopted. You essentially could have a Khoisan council that is established for a period of 10 years, 9 years. And I think that might be problematic. Provided, so what I'm proposing is that I don't have a problem too much with it, except to say that maybe you need to put in a provision that where any Khoisan council has existed for a period longer than 18 months, fresh elections must be held, or something along those lines, so that you don't have this perpetuity situation. I don't know what the time frame would be, but I think that there needs to be some kind of limitation clause on a body that might be established immediately and run for a long period. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you could just scroll up a little bit more. So, where it says, on the date of the commencement of this Act, were members of such a council established and constituted in terms of applicable national or provincial legislation, remain members of the council concerned until 30 April 2022. Again, no problem with the clause per se, but I foresee challenges here on the basis that we already know that a number of our traditional councils are not properly constituted and established. And I think there needs to be very clear, it needs to be very clearly stated that so it says established and constituted in terms of applicable national or provincial legislation. Legally established, legally constituted, I don't know what the wording is, and that's something that you guys would be better placed to put in, but we don't want illegitimate councils being carried through all the way to 2022.
Let me deal with the last one first. You're quite correct. But remember the other bill that you dealt with?
The
Framework Amendment Bill is addressing that issue of the legality and the reconstitution process now. So they should not any illegal ones. But the other clauses in Clause 70, earlier on in Clause 70, the existing transitional provisions, there are ones that are very, very similar to what you've approved with the Framework Amendment Bill. To ensure that it's only, and the reference to the established in terms of national provincial legislation, whichever is applicable, means it must meet the requirements. We know that sometimes they don't all, but they must meet the requirements. But let me explain the Khoisan one quickly. And I think we need to look at possible time frame. We're all guessing because we don't know. But let's be honest. We all know we are in 2017 now. We all know the bill will not become law this year because after the National Assembly has dealt with it, it must still go to the National Council of Provinces. It is in Section 76. They will probably take a couple of months with it.
And if it goes through NA and NCOP, we already, the NCOP will only deal with it next year, I think that's the reality. So if they deal with it next year and it, and they adopt it on that site without the maintenance, remember if there's a maintenance by the NCOP, it must come back to this house. Let's say, for argument's sake, it becomes law by the end of 2018. Right? Now, in terms of this bill, provinces do not recognize Khoisan initially. There's an advisory committee on Khoisan matters that must be established. Now, once the bill has become law, it's going to take a while to have that committee established because you must follow a public participation process, invite, nomination, selection process. Let's say 6 months, I think, which is fair. So we're talking now about middle 2019. Now, again, the bill also says that once that advisory committee is established, you will give them a few months to get themselves in order before you actually allow applications to be lodged. You will see there's a clause in the bill that says we have to, the minister must publish a notice to say from when can people now officially lodge applications. That's just to say, look, once you have this committee, advisory committee, we know who the members are, it's all up here. Now you need to get these people offices, computers, the logistical issues before they can actually start working. And they need to decide how are they going to approach the whole process. So we're talking about realistically applications being launched from middle 2019 towards the end of for a period of 2 years. Also, there's no way that anyone who applies, any community leader, will be like recognized in a week or two. There's a lot of investigation that must be done. There's a process, there's consultation processes that the bill prescribes. So we're looking at maybe 2020. Now, if we say there's a community that is recognized in 2020, then the council must be established within 1 year. So you're talking about 2021, 2022 more likely, which is 5 years, 4 years maybe, 6 years maybe,
yeah.
But 10 years.
It took too long.
Yeah.
For setting up this advisory committee also, just to help for.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, we looked at this, Jay, we looked at this very carefully to say what is the reality. And that's why we changed this one to 2027 and not, you know, 2022 like the others, because if there is one established prior to 2022, they will probably be there for a few months or a year. And then you have to go through that costly exercise again of reconstituting. We said, that may not be fair. So, but we may be back in 2 years from now and say, maybe Mr. Weiland was right, let's change something else. It's a national board.
And then he's a capable man.
He has
learned from this experience now. He knows what you are talking about.
I think
he may be a big in Luna there.
He's also retiring in the next few years. So
who was he?
Jack, clause 73, which is a short title. I want to tell you something quickly about what we are doing here and why we're doing it. Currently, the short title just says, you know, that act is called the particular act and comes into operational date to be determined by the president. That's what it's saying. We're changing it to say that current thing becomes one, and we're adding this two to talk about different dates may be so determined in respect of different provisions of that. As we're sitting here, we do not foresee the reason why we should have that, because we believe the whole bill should come into operation. But we've only also learned from other experiences with other departments and laws that, you can run into trouble. I'll give you a simple example quickly. In the reconstitution process that they're busy with in Gauteng, we looked at the legislation of Gauteng. Now, we know Gauteng provincial law, they do not have a provincial house. But if you look at the legislation of Gauteng, there's a clause that says, there is hereby established a provincial house. So the law establishes a provincial house. If you look at the short title, they did not make provision for different clauses to come into operation on different days. They should have done that because those clauses should have been suspended until there was a necessity. So this experience to say, guys, once we get to the implementation stage of this, or to put this bill into operation, let's make sure that if along the way Parliament or the Department or whoever realizes that there's a clause or two that should not immediately come into operation, let's have this to cover ourselves to say, you know, suspend it all.
Mm-hmm. Chair, determined by who? So, let's say that this only gets approved in 2019 because of a problem that we encounter. That pushes out all sorts of dates and things like that along the way. That means that the President, by proclamation, can determine that the 2022 date of the Houses, the National House, for example, is no longer relevant.
The President cannot change the Act when it becomes law. He cannot change the Act by proclamation. It's only the date of commencement.
Oh, the date of commencement?
Only the date of commencement, yeah. Only the date of commencement. Remember, if you, for example, in terms of legislation, you just have a short title that says, this act is called the Additional Voice on Leadership Act 2018, and you say nothing else, then it comes into operation when the date is published in the gazette. If you say, it is act so-and-so, and it comes into operation on the date to be fixed by the President by proclamation, then the President must issue a proclamation to say, right, this act will come into operation. This is the most common one that you get.
Yeah.
But now that we just want to make sure that if there's something that you know you are not ready to implement, let's say for example clause 50. You get it with a lot of legislation. If there, for example, one of the clauses, let's say 50 for argument's sake, you cannot immediately implement for whatever reason. You say, right. You can, when it determines that the act comes into operation, you can say everything comes into operation except clause 50. But then when you're ready to implement clause 50, you must issue another proclamation to say 50, you know, what is the date of commencement. You'll see it in the current Framework Act, when it was amended in 2009. The amendments came into operation in January 2010, except for the part dealing with the Commission. The Commission part, for whatever reason, came into operation in February 2010. You see it with the Traditional Health Practitioners Act currently. The whole act came into operation except the part dealing with the registration of the traditional health practitioners and the traditional, the interim, mm-hmm. the final interim traditional, well, they still call it the final interim, I don't know why final interim, it doesn't make sense, but the final council is not in operation yet.
Which then, Chair, sorry, Chair, can I just follow up on this issue then because it's quite important. I mean, let's use that traditional health practitioners example. It's been suspended now for 7 years. What's to stop anything in this act from being suspended indefinitely? You know, one of the things that one of the reasons why we pass legislation is because it then binds government to act in a certain way. If the President, by proclamation, suspends something indefinitely, like the traditional health practitioners, who should have been registered years ago and, then it means that the legislation is actually irrelevant. So I'm very, very concerned that by putting this in, you're opening the door for executive dictatorial presidency tendencies. And I'm not saying that's the case, I'm saying you're opening the door to it, which is problematic as far as I'm concerned.
The question is somewhat related to what Melanie suggested earlier. But my understanding is a question that's important to fulfill a clear understanding and a plan of what is supposed to happen by when. One of the reasons that the data today was earlier on, and said this is not available, or perhaps it was made available, the document was made available later on. So what I'm saying is that we need to answer the question that we need to provide that kind of information of what is anticipated to happen by when in general. What that will do is to empower us so that we're able to track some of these issues.
Yeah.
take the comment. We can leave it exactly as it is. For the committee said leave it as it currently is, it's fine. It's basically the part B, the two, sorry, that is the new thing. It's just, we just thought, you know, you never know what may happen along the way. If there's something, there's a particular flaw that for whatever reason, you cannot immediately... Look, the alternative, of course, is if you leave it exactly as it is, and you do find that when you start implementing that there is one or two clauses that you cannot, for whatever reason, implement, we have to come back to the House. We have to come back to Parliament. We have to go through the whole legislative process. But, it's just a safety measure, just in case. But I think it's to the committee to decide. I have no problem if we leave it as it can be left.
No, but I want to put a question on the need to really ensure that we have a sense of the key milestones going into the future. Maybe it sounds to you like an administrative type question, but it's not today in terms of the... What are the key things that we expect to have in relation to the coming into being of this bill, what are the key milestones? I'm sure that, one should not lock you into a situation where things become important and every day it becomes a very big issue. But I'm sure it does no harm as well to just say, amongst others, the key milestones that are following, so that those key important critical things happen.
I think that is a very good question. For me, the key milestone that must happen first is the statement that must be given and the recognition of the Khoisan, and that is to establish the advisory public review of the Khoisan issue. For me, that is a key milestone that needs good planning and execution of our new capital of the law. Then after that, it would be the establishment and recognition of the leaders and the council of the Khoisan, and to prepare for them being part to become a member of the local and provincial national council. For me, those are the key milestones that this bill must achieve first. The rest of the bill is actually, if you go back to the current legislation, it's there, it's just fine-tuning some of the legal uncertainties that might be in the bill. So the whole bill now, the key milestone really is to deal with the Khoisan issue. And to put the real date there, how are you going to achieve that? And also, I think also the proper budgeting for this Khoisan implementation of what the law requires.
I also think that it is important, sort of a milestone or one and a half, capacity building, you know, to be ready with capacity building of those that will be identified out of that advisory committee. And to, you know, the budgetary issues is important. We have done several research work. We have a sense of how many structures are there. And so on, so that we don't get surprised after the promulgation, we find that we're stumbling. So the issue of milestones is critical, that at least we set it up according to the proposal there.
I think recognition takes long for that. Mm. Because there always be counter recognition. In fact, public hearing was very clear that we talk to someone who thinks that is a traditional person. Another one comes and says, I'm the one, not this one. It's going to happen like that in this committee. And there are people that we think they are recognized, suddenly they are not even in the light. And there will be counterclaims. It's going to take longer than that. Let alone, anyway, I think that doctor was saying, anthropology is saying, some of the matters are not even recorded.
only people that have some form of written information. The science coin are not with manual. And therefore, for them to justify, qualify, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. It's going to take longer than we expected, you know, to have this.
No, but not at least in those kinds of issues and difficulties that have been anticipated. But the last thing is to plot this, you know, this is the one that's supposed to happen. Within this period, they expect these kinds of challenges to arise, and this is how we anticipate.
So that means, many challenges.
But in planning, at least.
Must have some care.
Yeah.
Because what is the use of starting a bill that you can't implement? It's just that no man, second, we didn't anticipate a lot of other challenges. So it was not an easy thing, this job. Because I'm not sure, because in our overall, that is not a public theory. Suddenly, everywhere in the world, Alexander, Johannesburg, everywhere, they will come and say, I'm an impeachment person. Others come, and it's just going to be a little bit longer. I think they're planning for us, it should be a little bit proper. Just anticipate many of these things. I think we are saying that, Joseph, that we must anticipate some of these things. May not work according to our plan, anyway, but at least the idea is there for us to give you some of these things. But we do have an idea now how long this thing can take, what are the issues of it. In fact, you know, psychology is there, we know how to do it.
Thanks,
just also, as you raise these things, in a matter as complex as this, it always helps to have potential risks and how to mitigate them should they arise. I think that too will be able to help.
Thanks, Chair. We are well aware, you know, of the work that's waiting for the department specifically.
I'm going to apply
to prepare. Well, I'm going to retire before
I'm
the
going to apply. And then you will tell me why you are not recognizing me.
You want to
I'm not written anywhere.
You want to apply for a green card?
I apply to the team,
We can change the phone now.
Oh.
The amendments to Schedule 1, it's a very technical amendment to the heading. That was a proposal, I remember, that I think it was the National House made to the committee to say, you know, instead of just saying Code of Conduct, let's say it's a Code of Conduct of members of the Houses and Councils. So that's a very technical one. Schedule 3, all those that follow there, you see, in Schedule 3 is the one containing the amendments to other laws, like the remuneration legislation and the Section 81 of the Municipal Structures Act. Now, currently, as the bill reads, remember when the bill was tabled in 2015, the short title was so-and-so Act 2015. So all those 2015s, we have to change now to 2018, because that's when we anticipated to go through. And if it doesn't go through, we'll probably, by the end of next year, have to change it to 2019. But those are all those technical amendments. This particular one, on page 68, this is the clause, the amendment to section 81 of the Municipal Structures Act. This particular sub-clause, I'll just find the page myself here, 4, which is about the proceedings, the participation of a leader in the proceedings of the municipality. This particular addition of paragraph J was a proposal by Salva. And I remember when they presented to the committee was quite open to that particular proposal. And there's another one. I'll come back to this one. This one on page 69 after line 25. Same here. These were proposals made by Folga. We got the impression from the committee that they would accept those two particular ones.
just on Amendment 9 there, provided that non-attendance or non-participation will have no effect on any municipal council proceedings. I'm not 100% certain if it's covered in the Code of Conduct for traditional leaders, but the Code of Conduct for councillors has a rule that non-attendance of 3 meetings is grounds for termination of your membership of council. Would the same apply here, and if not, why not? Because one of the things that these people are there to do is to provide representation for traditional communities. The way it reads there, it doesn't have any binding effect. And I would propose that we add in a line that says, further provided that non-attendance of 3 or more meetings may result in the replacement of the concerned traditional leader by another traditional leader representing communities within the municipality, or something along those lines.
And there's an emerging issue from the dialogue that we've just had with traditional leaders and so on. And I just wondered, because every year the president opens the National House, every year premiers open provincial houses where they are outlining priorities for that financial year. But it doesn't happen lower down. Now, when we talk participation of traditional leaders at that lower level, they have their own structures, like the traditional councils. Why can't the mayors do the same, table their priorities? In my view, that would go a long way. Because the issue of stipend, which quite often comes on the table to say, if we go and attend the municipality. And the second thing, they say, there are caucuses, because political parties are in that way. When they caucus, when they come to a meeting, traditional leaders complain that they just say, agreed, without traditional leaders understanding the background and the depth of the issues discussed. So I was just raising this. It would go a long way to promote social cohesion in that sort of space, because it will not involve any stipend thing. The traditional council, which will be constituted of 40% of the elected and so on, they'll be able to know which of those things that have been raised through the IDP consultative processes are covered in the priorities on the things that are going to be done. So that if services are not coming, if not all the things that have been raised in the IDP process are not covered, they will understand that, the budget could not cover all those sorts of things.
But part of the IDP and budgeting roadshow is an outreach to traditional communities and traditional leaders. They should be part of that process, and if they're not, then they must actually answer to their communities as to why they are not participating in those. You can't now put the obligation on the municipality to have additional consultative meetings specifically with traditional leaders. And yes, political parties have caucuses, but nothing is preventing a traditional leader from asking a question in a council, putting standing up and saying, I don't understand what's going on here, please explain to me why you're doing this. That's provided for in Section 80 of the Systems Act. So I don't understand why we would want to now force municipalities to go out to traditional leaders. When the traditional leaders have their representation on council, they have their input, they are entitled to ask questions, they are allowed to make statements. The only thing they can't do is vote. That's the only thing they can't do. They can't be part of a caucus. They can't go and sit in the ANC caucus or the DA caucus, but they can certainly ask questions and get greater understanding. But coming back to my earlier question, I just went quickly back to Schedule 1, which was the Code of Conduct. And I noticed that Section 4 of Schedule 1 talks about sanctions for non-attendance of meetings, and it says a member who, without leave of absence, is absent from 3 or more consecutive meetings of the House or a council which that member is required to attend must be removed from office as a member of the House or such council. Can I suggest that we put in after the first reference to council, including a municipal council?
It just then clarifies that it's not just the traditional council, but also a municipal council that they are required to attend. They are subject to the code of conduct for traditional leaders. I don't know.
Just to reinforce the point there, I agree with the idea of IDP and so on. So it may be useful for the department to spend a bit of time, firstly, focusing on the need not to multiply meetings. Have 101 meetings and so on. But to also identify the key meetings, such as, for instance, the process towards the adoption of the IDP and so on. And making sure that these meetings are more focused and more meaningful. Including push of the participation by traditional leaders and so on. So that more of these perceptions of them not being meaningfully involved, keeping a distance, and so on, is eroded in a systematic sort of way and making them become part of the key process. I'm sure those meetings can be identified. Well, some of them will lead to the budget, some to development, and so on. Maybe just one element that we need to think about. And I know that one has raised this point as the by the by, and it hasn't gotten anywhere so far. You know, the traditional African communities, by this I mean the pre-colonial type practices, included something called Itlima, and I'm sure there's a similar name in most of the languages in South Africa. That concept was a very useful collective effort by local communities to improve their own quality of life. We do need to get traditional leaders to see themselves playing such a meaningful developmental role in their own local communities. I don't know what one is that may have done in the future, but I'm sure our honorable professors and learned friends can really look at this concept and find a way of reintroducing it. It's something that's very useful, that is uniquely traditional, that can also be modernized as we move into.
Thank you, Chair. I'm aware when we talk about the issue, very important. I want to highlight something on the map that is moved from one point to another. I think we must never take it lightly. What we are proposing here and we are trying to brainstorm might not go well. But I was on the issue of this consultation. Indeed, I'm agreeing. There is no need for the specific particular local council maybe to be attended to in terms of ICT. But there is a problem already, particularly in Mpumalanga, for example. District, they have programs called Vision Group, where they contact the chief. Go to that traditional center, inviting all the people, you know, they put that the report and they contact the second issue. The second issue, they also called the memo to those traditional leaders. So normally the counselors are being invited there and to do the speech and all. So for me, I think this consultation is sufficient. But also I'm not so sure whether it happens to other provinces. But I was also referring to Dubala, for example. There are even bills where the district mayor is conducting all the chiefs under the district. You know, there's also this memo where a local mayor is being invited there, the district mayor is being invited there, the councillors are being invited there. Yeah, there's community.
Well, I think that we can't have all meetings with the structure. There'll be meetings where people are very creative, you know, work on that for communication purposes. I think the conduct of my conduct is there should be two meetings. Some of the meetings are creative. Not every mayor wants to visit the Mako. Sometimes the relationship between a mayor and a Mako is not a good relationship. Generally, let us try to ensure that a bill gives a broader picture of things. The details to be worked out by the relevant area and the relevant government bodies to deal with some of the issues. There will always be creativity, Professor. Maybe in November, they've got other views that are doing things better, which are not called the other area. I think they'll learn from each other.
And, you know, I also wanted to the point that was made. I agree that, you know, making too many meetings, you know, but the issue of sustainability, how do these communities sustain themselves? The thing that bedevils the sector is money. You know, the conflicts that are there in Royal Families, the percentage of those conflicts is very high because it's money. Now, the remuneration and stipend. Now in the past, it was a stipend. It was not worth fighting. Now that there's a salary and a scale, you know, the issue of self-reliance, if we're looking into the distant future, if we do not work towards that issue of self-reliance, as Honorable Masondo is proposing, I have always argued that they always say our salaries are not enough. And when you ask them, how much is enough? A traditional leader cannot, you know, is not paid for what they do. They are paid for who they are and what they represent in society. And you can't touch it with your own hand. So you can't put an amount into that. So I'm just saying, perhaps that issue of putting money into this thing, this thing that causes loss, and that's why people are contesting, fighting, refusing to allow another person, so they're looking at this case.
Professor, they want you to be studying this thing for years. The anthropology where you've been studying this thing for years. And then surely in the capitalist society, money makes sense. You wouldn't find all these changes. Anyway, there will be no war if there's no money. In fact, I think even this acceptance in terms of materials will be easy. But now it's payment. That is a bigger issue. Can't avoid it. And I think that those who are doing this matter, as professor yourself, you try to find a better way of addressing. But I think the sustainability of this community is a very important area. But you can do that by engaging the leadership in many forums of assisting them to develop the local economy. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
No, just trying to reinforce the point that we're not making earlier on. You know, there are many things that people have been doing over many years. For instance, just make an example. Just an example. For instance, you know, in areas like KZN, there's this thing that is called Ubuntu, which was a reaction against colonial domination, where young people of a particular age are put together and they're given a name. You will know this even better. So, for instance, if an old man was to say, Mumanugilan, you know, it says that those who are of the same age group will have a sense of how old that person is. Because Umutwa, or he group into battalions or whatever, was that at a particular point. And the person who was given that responsibility was the king, who would say, you are such and such. In the old days, it used to be used for warfare. But in later years, it was merely symbolic and so on. Now, what's wrong with putting people together so that they produce bricks for a particular period of time without any remuneration? Without considering in this thing of paying people and so on and so forth. And then the bricks would be used to build a few houses and so on. And then as people do that kind of thing, they become more community oriented and begin to see things differently. So this is something that I think we should look at. So we're not tapping into something that's very new and so on, but you're saying you're building on something that has been there already in traditional society, something that you can relate to, could relate to in the past, can relate to now. The emphasis is just development as opposed to warfare or any some such thing. But the thing of young kids going to the mountain and so on is in fact supposed to be find a bit more meaningful expression in this kind of direction. I mean, yeah. If you think about it carefully, phrase it properly, sell it, and get a buy-in, we can begin to see a lot more positive things happening in rural communities.
Maybe a workshop of around the city looking at all the issues. Because if we pay people because they were born in their family, we are paying them that they were born in this family. Well, it's a sector. That now I was born as Masondo, my father was the king at a certain point, then I must pay for the fact that I was born in that family. It's the only contribution that we are making with society. And then I think workshop would be necessary to have some discussion with them, raising some of the traditional issues. We modernize them to do what is now, but it's very important. Because I really, that's the people who work in the mines who pay a key because you are just born a key. And then it doesn't do anything else. That's a very big problem that has to be addressed as we go on there. But of course, we appreciate the traditional leadership. I think they're doing a good job somewhere. Doctor, you want to conclude?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I will focus just on the Section 81 part of the discussion. I think you must remember that these one or two additional amendments that we see on screen that came from SALGA is just a smaller depiction. The whole Section 81 of the current Structures Act is going to be replaced in terms of this bill. And you will find it on pages 66 to 70 of the French version of the bill. Now, currently, the existing Structures Act, Section 81, read together with Schedule 6 of that Act, deals about the participation of traditional leadership in municipal proceedings and the identification of them. Who are they? How must they be identified? That section does not say a lot, to be honest. Now, I have to go back a little bit, a few years. I think it was in 2012, more or less, Johan and Tricia, we all started working on a project developing a framework for the participation of traditional leaders in municipal councils. We did this together with other colleagues in the department, other life function units in the department, houses of traditional leaders, the provincial government departments responsible for COCTA, as well as SALGA, very important role player. And we developed this particular framework because we realized that the current Section 81 is insufficient. And that framework formed the basis of what we have here in the bill as to the replacement of Section 81. So it's just important that members go through that because you will see
all the gaps, the numerous gaps in the current Section 81 are addressed in this particular proposed Section 81 that's in here in Schedule 3. So I'm going to raise the issue about the Code of Conduct. Now, the Code of Conduct of Municipal Councillors, I think you also mentioned it, it's not in the Structures Act, it's in the Systems Act. And if there's a lot of cross-references, and it took us a while to actually figure it out, but what it says is that also these participating traditional leaders are subject to that Code of Conduct. Not the whole one. That's another challenging thing to work out, but it's certain provisions of that Code of Conduct that they are subject to. Remember, they are not councillors, and they do not have voting rights. But at least this Section 81 that we have in the bill is spelling out exactly what will their roles be, so that there's clarity. Currently, it differs a lot from municipality to municipality, how they approach it, and also from the traditional leadership side. Many of them participate, others do not participate. I think the reason so why Salga wanted to bring this particular clause in was just to say, look, whether you participate or not, don't come later and say that because you were not there, that a decision taken by the municipal council can be challenged. And I think that Salga just wanted to say, let's put it in and make sure and say that you also understand that if you do not participate, you can't come and hold other ends. I think that's what they want. I also wanted to say that if you go through this whole page 66 to 70 and you read it, you will see that we brought in accountability also. Leaders in future, when they participate in these municipal councils, they can be monitored, first of all, which you do not currently have, monitor their participation, and they will be forced to give feedback to their community, something which is not currently necessarily happening. So all these gaps, there were lots and lots of gaps that we identified together with Salga and the provinces, were addressed in this particular clause. So that is then, Chair, dealing with those two additions to Section 81 amendments that Salga asked for. Salga also said, and remember this is just our proposal, the committee can reject it. Salga also said that they would like traditional leaders to make known to the municipal council when they do land allocations in terms of their customary laws and traditions, so that the municipality also knows. And then, of course, they must assist the municipal council with the famous Puma implementation. And I think Salga was also cautious of this one. This is how they propose, just to say, support the municipality with the implementation of Puma. Obviously, Puma itself has provisions as to what must be done, how it must be done. And there's also Puma regulations. And I think we all know that there's quite a serious discussion between that department, that ministry, and traditional leadership about this whole Stuma. But we're not touching Stuma detail. We're just referring to say, by the way, part of your responsibility when you participate is to also deal with Stuma.
Then a quick one on that.
The word support indicates agreement. In other words, if the municipality says this is the way we are doing it, support would imply that the traditional leaders must agree with that implementation. I would propose that the word support be replaced by assist,
okay,
rather than support, because it says that they are now, even if they don't agree, they can assist with the implementation process.
This is 2015 changing to 2018. This is the end of it. Chair, what we've done, normally you do not, but I think you have a choice to include amendments to the memorandum of objects as part of committee amendments. I've seen it done, but the majority of times it is not done. It's not included. But your problem is, of course, in you as members, if you agree to certain of these amendments, you have to amend the particular part of your objects memorandum to reflect your amendments, committee amendments, so that people in the NCOP, when it goes to the NCOP, doesn't have a memorandum of objects that reads about 2017, and the clause that reads about 2022, and there's a lot of confusion. I've included it just for sake of completeness, comprehensiveness. I know that between Shireen and the law advisors, they will say whether it will act, but it's there. We don't have to go through that. It's just explaining what we were talking about. I know they will change it. It will be changed as part of the memorandum of objects through the B version if these things are agreed to. But the only thing that I do not know is whether it should be part of the A version we were in a project. I spoke to some of the state law advisors and said, yeah, you can include it. So, but then the last two or three pages just deals with the clauses of the memorandum of the objects that will have to be amended.
You're fine?
Yeah, thank you, Chief.
Thank you, sir. This is very helpful. Very helpful. This, of course, there will be difficult details, and remember, when they come tomorrow, the quality of the of our program is under 17. 17 is Thursday. General Thursday is a set of for focus. We shouldn't set up mission Thursday. Thursday is a set of focus. If focus is not meeting other programs, we have start by meeting and all that. In case they can't work, we'll have to find a date. Let us work on it. He's ready tomorrow. We'll try to accommodate Melham, but let us not deal with close by close in detail before we conclude the present public hearing. He bears with in mind that present there, but he may not add more other issues. But for giving respect to the process and procedure, I think the point that is raised is fine. Maybe tomorrow then we'll have the briefing on the indigenous Lindaba. What are the recommendations? What we can do with this recommendation? The relevance of those results to what we are trying to do now, I think would be very critical for us. Mayhem, I think we are accommodated. We have been able to persuade the meeting.
Thank you, Chief.
To agree with our views. We will have more time. The program is accepted. And after we have, I think, Sunday and Monday, we are dealing with this issue. Tomorrow, some discussion on the field, some of the areas that are still there. And then we'll brief us off in the other. Outcome. I think their report is there already, or their recommendation. And first day we should meet. We are going to conduct this. Then we'll see them follow the report. I think they're part from the. But tomorrow, doctor will come in. Of course, we are informed that Honorable Papel is deployed in another area. He is the one that is going to be. And on the traditional in that. Madam, is that attending?
The traditional job?
No. You didn't attend.
I wasn't invited.
You're not invited? I thought members were invited. Oh, okay. You didn't get a letter formally. Because we wanted to make you a king then. We want to recruit you to be applying on the conclusion. I'll be your induna.
Here we go.
I'll be shipping doing the cosmetics. We'll fight every day over him. Okay, colleagues.
I think then let us adjourn our meeting. Thank you very much for attending. Thanks for your contribution. Thank you, Dr. for your for a meeting now.
Well, hey,
that's incredible.
Yeah.
See you
tomorrow.
No, I'm waiting for it.